welcome to another episode of the Fundamentals Podcast. I am your host, Harley. Joining me on this episode to discuss Black Books, it's writer, critic, and showrunner for the Not Just for Kids podcast, it's Russell Bailey. Russell was kind enough to jump onto the show and discuss one of my absolute personal favourites, and that is, of course, Black Books. Black Books is quite a unique sitcom. In many ways, it's very different to a lot of the shows that we've discussed on this podcast, and we get into the reasons as to why and what works for this show exactly, including, of course, the characters, the performances, the writing style, and so much more. This was such a fun conversation, and I really cannot wait for you guys to hear it. So without further ado, let's get straight into it. This is Black Books with Russell Bailey. Hello, Russell, and welcome to the Fundamentals Podcast.
Hi there. Thank you so much for having me on. I'm really excited to chat to you today.
Likewise, my friend. So, yeah, you're continuing the sitcom summer for us, and you've brought a personal favourite of mine, and I'm so, so happy. I feel like I'm being really self-indulgent the last few episodes, but it's totally fine. That is, of course, Black Books. So I'll hand it over to you. When did you first see this show, and why did you choose to bring it to the podcast?
So I, when I was growing up as a teenager, I watched basically all the Channel 4 comedy shows. So Black Books is a Channel 4 sitcom from the early 2000s. And around that time, I definitely watched all the stuff on Channel 4. So I was watching Father Ted, Spaced, Black Books, and a few others. But Black Books is the one that's kind of lingered with me, and it's kind of stayed with me ever since. Like, I revisit Father Ted, and I find it really fascinating. I revisit Space, and I think it's phenomenally directed. But the one that speaks to me as I get older and older and older is Black Books. It's the makeup of it. I find myself a weird combination between two of its lead characters. And yeah, and so I watch this fairly often. And it's only 18 episodes, so I blast through it fairly often in like a week or two. I watch all the episodes, and it brings me great comfort, but it's also this wonderfully grounded sitcom that doesn't go too far off into being too optimistic. It doesn't really tell me that the world is a great place. And I found myself really drawn into what it is. Plus the lead three, I just love. We'll probably get into each of them, but yeah, it's got this fantastic trio at its core. And I adore this. And I've revisited it many a time. So that's why I brought it to you, because when you put this thing up for someone to talk about their favourite sitcoms, I have other sitcoms that I love, but the one that I revisit the most is probably Black Books, because, again, not a great many episodes. Episodes are short, easy, and you can pick them up and put them down. And I guess they mean a lot to me, because my formative comedy years was with a show like this and a few other Channel 4 ones. It was, this is my comedy.
Yeah, I mean, that's brilliant. And that is definitely a running theme that we've had throughout this particular series is, yeah, the formative years, people growing up watching a certain show and just gravitating towards them. I feel like it says a lot about people, you know, this in terms of the particular show that you gravitate towards. And I'd love to get into this with you, because I feel like this reveals a lot about your personality there, Russell. If you're identifying heavily with the kind of crazy, almost nihilistic, chaotic style of show. I mean, I love it. I will preface that by saying, like you, this is one I revisit quite often because, as you say, it's an absolute breeze. But you're right. It's so fascinating. I mean, actually, it's occurred to me at the time of recording that a vast majority of the episodes I've done, I think actually all of them up till now, have been American sitcoms.
Yeah.
And we have got a run now coming off of a few British shows. And it has been commented on by previous guests that there is definitely a difference. Like you mentioned optimism. That is definitely a key most of the time, not all, but most of the American sitcoms have that. Whereas I feel like this is a good example of British comedy at its best, where it's like these kind of almost like dour characters that they're all lovable in their own way, but they're also not the best people. They're all kind of like curmudgeonly, but you kind of can't help but enjoy watching them and watching them get into all sorts of weird scrapes with each other and with other wonderful guest characters that just pop in and out of the show.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, the American thing is, so that I do have American sitcoms I love, but the ones I love tend to run too long. So I I love Friends up until a point, and then it carries on. And I love The Simpsons. I think The Simpsons at its peak is probably the best sitcom, but its peak was a very long time ago. So the sitcoms that mean the most to me are the ones that are short and sweet and just there for a brief moment, and you get a few episodes and you really want more, but you don't get more. And that's just how it works. You just don't get any more of a show like Black Books.
True. But then I feel like that's a good thing. You know, this is the kind of show very much in the vein of, like, you know, The Office, or you mentioned IT Crowd, Father Ted, you know, similar creators, where, it kind of runs its course, you know, and that's totally fine. I think there's nothing wrong with that. That's just, I don't know. Personally, I feel like that makes it almost more enjoyable, because, you know what I mean? You've got something that's perfectly preserved, and it just kind of went out when it needed to go out. So for anyone who doesn't know, then, this show, it's quite an interesting premise, isn't it? It's basically about this guy that just runs a bookshop in London, and it feels quite quaint now, but I don't know. I heard from behind the scenes that Dylan Moran was drawn to this idea because he always thought it was quite an interesting, just an interesting place to exist. Even back in the early 2000s, he felt like it was a dying industry. It was something that, like, this doesn't have a place anymore in the modern world. And that was over 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And so I feel like it's really interesting looking back on it now. Like, so please talk to me about it.
Yeah, and so it's perhaps the running thread through the show is that. So Bernard Black runs a bookshop but hates people. So he runs it poorly. It is increasingly a filthy place to be. And that is a comedy beat that comes up a couple of times. There's a couple of episodes where it's about just how filthy a place it is. And he has no desire to keep it up, no desire to be around people. And then one of the most famous episodes, I think, is where Simon Pegg cameos, and this big, it's called Goliath Books, in a not very subtle joke, but a really funny joke. So one of those big chain bookshops opens next door, and it becomes a thing. And they previously have had an episode of the show where they try and emulate what a big bookshop does. And there's that whole conversation going on in this show about these little shops, and really there's no place for them. So, like, Fran, who is one of our core trio, spends the first series with a shop of her own, and then it's not really mentioned, but then her shop closes, and then you see it close next door to her. And it's not this big plot point, but it is this thing that clearly happens. And Fran goes through this process of struggling to find work for the rest of the show, and it's just these really interesting underlying conversations happening that are kind of beneath the sort of wacky day-to-day stuff they do. So each episode is kind of self-contained and has a setup, and there's often this incident that's happened that then spurns other instances after that that then culminate at the end. But then at the same time, that kind of conversation about the fact that things like bookshops are dying, things like shops, independent shops, don't really have a place. And this was in 2000, so this was a long, long time before we are now. And we basically, it's just happened. So he just basically saw in advance where we were heading, which is that shops like this won't survive. And maybe Bernard Black's bookshops shouldn't survive. Maybe how poorly run it is and how terribly is it running it is just, it shouldn't survive, because he is abusive to his customers. He opens and closes it when he wants. He stocks whatever he wants, and he doesn't seem to care about making money. So he'll pay people to take books to go away because he just doesn't want to be around people. So you're kind of curious as to why this person has a bookshop, has a customer facing role, because he just hates people, and endearingly so. I really like Bernard Black in this, even if he is he's not a nice character. He's mean and abusive to his only real friend, Manny, and Fran, and he's just not a nice person, but he's endearingly not nice in a really British sitcom kind of way.
How much is this?
£3.
Ah.
Is there something wrong with your head? Are you wagging it to say, no, there's nothing wrong with my head, or is it just uncontrollable? Perhaps you'd like me to put the price down.
Well, I was thinking £2.
Because £3 is just naked profiteering for a book mere 912 pages long. What'll I do with that extra pound? I'll add an acre to the grounds. I'll chuck some more koi carp in my piano-shaped pond. No, I know. I'll build a wing on the National Gallery with my name on it.
250.
That's more like it. Now you're being reasonable. 250 gets you this much. You can have the rest when you come back with the other 50p.
But you...
Thank you!
Yeah, it gives you real sort of Fawlty Towers kind of vibes. Like, if anyone loves that show, I would say, like, this is a really good jumping off point into that, because it's that same kind of thing of that, like you said, that protagonist that clearly doesn't enjoy people. And there's something I find kind of cathartic about that. As someone who, I don't know about you yourself, but if you've ever worked in a customer-facing role in retail or like things like that, there is some catharsis in watching a character being kind of mean and saying things that, you know, most of us wouldn't dare say to people. So, you know, it was like, it kind of reminds me of what I was saying with Petros. We talked about Seinfeld. It's that thing of like, you don't condone the bad behavior.
Yeah.
But you kind of secretly enjoy it because you're almost like, yeah, I wish I could say something like that to people sometimes. But of course, it doesn't always work out for them. But no, I think Bernard Black is, I feel like it's just Dylan Moran just being Dylan Moran. Like, have you seen any of his stand-up?
I have. I've managed to go and see him live once or twice, maybe. And
he's incredible.
I mean, it is for me a bit like sitcom as jazz, because it was all, he just would jump around a lot, but clearly knew what he was doing. He's one of the best stand-ups I've ever seen, because he's just, he goes at his own beat and his own pace, and then jumps from whatever subject he wants to jump to, and he goes on random tangents, which is not dissimilar to the show itself. The show itself has random tangents, has these surreal interludes. So there's this episode where the A and B plots, the A plot is that they are trying to become a proper bookshop that sells nice coffee and does lunch. And then the B plot is that Fran is trying to find her more of her family. And then there's this weird thing going through where these creatures that we never see, and they're just going through killing them and tallying them up. And that's all it is. And it's this hilariously random tangent that's running through this entire episode that isn't picked up ever again. And it's just in this episode, but it's just that kind of humor that comes from Dylan Moran being one of the creators and one of the writers, and this being very much his baby. It's his comedy is infused in this.
Yeah, very much so. And I love how the episode ends. I think, wasn't it with Manny just grabs something in a pot and just goes, I got the queen, and it just ends like that. And then, like you said, it's never referenced.
Yeah, it's again. Just the one episode and it's done kind of thing.
But that's the thing that caught me off guard when I, after watching this show, then found some Dylan Moran stand up and I thought, oh yeah, and I watched it. I don't know what I was expecting, but it was very funny to watch his stand up and be like, oh, he's just being himself in that show.
Yeah.
Like it's basically like he's written that show for himself. And like you said, it's got that kind of loose. I love the word jazz. Like you said, that's perfect analogy. Fast and loose kind of quality, but it's really funny to watch. And like you say, as a main character, he does have that Basil Fawlty, Jerry Seinfeld kind of thing of like, yeah, you don't like him particularly, but you kind of do. You kind of like seeing him get up to things and just being a bit of a jerk to people. And you know, one of my favorite interactions is when some guy's desperately trying to get into the bookshop to buy a book, and he just hands him something on a shelf and is like, read this, it'll change your life. And he was just like trying his best to get rid of him.
Yeah.
And all the stuff like that he does is brilliant.
What? I'd like to buy a book.
Here's one.
No, I was...
This one's very, very good.
Oh, is it?
Yes. You'll laugh, you'll cry, it'll change your life. $5.99.
All right, okay. Oh, my change?
Can you come back later?
Well, no, I'm not coming back this way.
Where do you live?
17 Galaxy Gardens.
Okay. Now go there and await my instructions.
And yeah, so he's a character who I am more than happy to spend 25 minutes with each episode, but never want to meet him, never want to go out for a drink with...
Oh, no.
With Bernard Black. He's not one of those characters, but that's what makes him brilliant. And he's not... Because Black Books is slightly detached from our reality, it's slightly surreal. Mm-hmm. It has these touches that make it not our world. It's not like The Office where David Brent is like someone you could meet. You're unlikely to meet someone like Bernard Black who runs a bookshop like this. It's not going to happen. True. But it makes it all the more enjoyable for me to watch this show because it's just slightly detached, just slightly moved away. Kind of like in Fawlty Towers, how the sets wobble. And so that means that you're not in our reality because the sets are wobbling. And yes, John Cleese, whenever that happens, will like check the wall and make sure it's okay, as if it's part of it. It's still wobbly sets. And so you're kind of given that kind of like slight displacement from what's going on, which makes it even funnier for me.
Absolutely. Yeah. And again, the way he just talks to a lot of the people, like you're like, yeah, no one has conversations like that in real life, but it makes it more enjoyable, you know. And I just flashed another one in my brain of that as a guy who asks him if they're leather bound books. And just then I think he replies with something like, you know, with pounds, is it leather bound pounds? And he's like, no, then I don't want it. And just like the little silly conversations like that, like you said, that give it this sort of heightened reality, but make it also really, really enjoyable. Yeah. And something we talked about a lot on this show is, and you've already touched upon it, is the fact that you need a good core of cast of people. You need people to bounce off each other. And I feel like it's fascinating how a character that is that kind of nihilistic and narcissistic in many ways bounces off the other two really well. And it's quite funny. Like you said, you've already mentioned him, obviously the legend in comedy that is Bill Bailey.
Yeah.
And his kind of interplay as Manny and Bernard, I think it's a hilariously dysfunctional relationship, and they heighten those tropes up quite a lot. Like they really play up to them almost being like an old married couple within like an episode of knowing each other.
Yeah. And so Bill Bailey is one of the key trio, and this is kind of very early Bill Bailey. This is before he became the national treasure that he is now. And so, but it's all the stuff that you love about Bill Bailey is in this character, all the stuff that makes him endearing, and it is their interplay. So there's the wonderful episode where they drink a very expensive bottle of wine, and so they have to then make one, and it becomes absurd and heightened and like dips into sort of universal monsters of the 30s and how it's being set up, and that with Bernard Black as the crazed scientist and Manny as his crippled assistant, because Manny gets increasingly crippled throughout that episode because he eats toffee and he uses a neck massager that cripples him, and it's all these things built in. But yeah, the interplay between Bailey and Moran is fantastic. And then you add into that mix, you've got Tamsin Grieg, who is, a mainstay of Channel 4 comedy. So she's done Green Wing, she's done Friday Night Dinner. Mm. I'll be honest, I almost picked Friday Night Dinner for this, or suggested that, because Night Dinner, while it's more grounded in our reality, is an exceptional comedy. And it feels almost at times that there's a through line from her work in Black Books to something like Friday Night Dinner, and that her comedy sensibilities, because she's acceptable at playing off whoever she's with. She is an exceptional actor, and not a stand-up comedian, but an actual actor. So I've watched her do Twelfth Night at the National Theatre, where she was Malvolio, and I think I've seen her in Much Ado About Nothing. But yeah, so she's a proper actor, and yet she manages to meet the energy of the other two perfectly. And that's why I love this one the most, is because the trio is so watertight and their chemistry is so spot on, even from the first episode. Even the first time we meet them, their chemistry is there, and it just means that whatever japes get up to, whatever direction the show goes, it works because of those three characters are so immediately well-defined and connected to each other. And as you say, like, you get the two... you get Manny and Bernard playing off each other as a sort of quasi-married couple, and we get to like a point where Manny will leave occasionally, and then Bernard kind of falls apart and gets angry and destructive, and then Manny comes back to rescue him. it's really well judged.
It's just something I love, and it's a really good use, I think, of, as you say, Tamsin Grieg's character Fran, because she doesn't then just become the love interest for somebody. She's more like the mum of the group, like she's the one that has to get in between them sometimes and like give them a bit of a slap around the head, but then she can also be just as dysfunctional at times, and it makes it a really interesting character to watch. And I seem to recall, I think even in the first, it might be the first or the second episode, I think it's the second, because they're sort of all coming together, and I think Manny outrightly asked Bernard, you know, like, oh, did you, and he just advances around and he's like, come out with it then. And then he's like, oh, did you guys sleep together? And then he's all bashful, and then he suddenly, and it just, the way he shuts that whole thing down is like, oh yeah, it happened, but you know, I'm not allowed to remember it. And it's just, it's played off as a dumb joke like that. And immediately that whole trope of the will they won't, it's just, it's gone.
Yeah.
You're kind of like, oh, okay, we're not doing that. And it makes it so much more interesting then whenever Fran does turn up, because she's just completely her own entity and she's allowed to just do whatever she wants, whether it's, you know, entering a job where she has no idea what she's doing and, you know, or or she's competing for wall space quite literally with someone else in a flat and all these really weird things that she gets to do. And then she also gets to be dysfunctional and a borderline alcoholic with Bernard at the same time. And yeah, it just makes it really interesting then when all these characters get together. There's no stereotypes, there's no tropes. It's just whatever happens is going to happen.
And you mentioned alcohol there. Black Books is not about books, it's about alcohol. They really don't care about books. They occasionally will make references to books. There is a fantastic episode where they write a children's book. But apart from that, books just aren't really a thing in this show. And so it is about them consuming a huge amount of alcohol. And many episodes revolve around that fact. And it's another one of the constants that runs through is that they just drink a lot. And in Fran's case, smoke a lot. And they're quite destructive together. But so when I was at university, which is one of the many times I revisited this, I enjoyed far too many drinks at university. And so that kind of destructive quality is there at that point that you just, that they kind of have. But yeah, alcohol is so integral to this show. And not in a way that it's exploring of why it's fun to drink. It's just because it's funny when they're drunk, or it's funny when Manny drinks all of Bernard's absinthe, or they have some weird random alcohols at the end of the last episode they've taken from a party. It's just a lot of the comedy of alcohol is in here, and it's done really well.
Old wine is good wine.
Yes, but expensive wine is good wine also.
Yes, but the older the wine is, the gooder it is.
Ah, but by the same token, the more expensive the wine, then the gooder it is also.
Oh, look at the colours.
Yeah.
All the colours.
Yeah.
Well, yellow.
This is like a farmyard of wine.
It's like looking into the eye of a duck.
And sucking all the fluid from its beak.
Yeah, and it kind of explains, like, why in particular Bernard is drawn to the bookshop. As you say, he's not interested in really books or people. He just wants an excuse to hang out with his mate next door and drink wine at lunch every single day. And it's kind of, I think, brutally honest about, like, British culture and things like that and stuff that you see all the time. And there's even, like, the episode where, I think, again, the second one, where they kind of establish how Manny's been hired, and it's because Dylan's just, or sorry, Bernard is absolutely smashed out of his face.
Yeah.
And it's a very funny scene with him in a pub. You know, and his drunk acting is incredible. Like, he's so good at selling it. And like you said, a lot of the decisions and things that they end up doing are the result of drinking too much, basically. And as you said, one of my favorite episodes is where they're trying to create wine from that really expensive wine thing that they've drank. And like you said, that's a whole episode, literally. It's a bottle episode, really, about a bottle of wine. It's really clever.
Yeah. Plus, it has the truth that, I mean, all wine tastes the same. No one knows anything about wine. When they say it's expensive, it's not really expensive. But then the kicker is that the wine they do create, I think, does it kill the Pope?
Yeah.
So, yeah, right, the whole episode is about this bottle of wine is going to be given to the Pope because it's this bush that has had grapes. And I think it's a rose bush gets grapes, and it's some big moment. And so we have like a cold open, and then it goes into the episode. And by the end, they've killed off the Pope by making terrible alternative wine.
And again, the funny thing is, that's just a button at the end of the episode. That's
just
like a huge
It just ends.
Point.
It ends at that point.
Yeah. It's just there. Like, you blink and you miss it. And even Bernard's completely oblivious to it. Like, the joke is he reads something else in the newspaper that gets his attention, not the headline.
Yeah, it's that it's his birthday. And so he holds up the front of the newspaper with the story, and it goes, "It's my birthday," and that's how it ends.
Yeah, it's so good. It's so good, man. And I feel like it's also a good excuse for Dylan ran to exercise some of his stand-up comic points. You know, like, there's a, like you say, a lot of his humour is in it, and it's some of his observations on British society, which I think is just absolutely wonderful. Like, I remember the episode where they go travelling, and it's that him just making fun of this idea of cheap flights, and he goes, "Oh, cheap flights, wonderful," and he just takes this kind of cynical view of it and being like, "Yeah, but then you end up hopping from country to country," and that's the joke of that whole episode.
Yeah,
sorry about the dog.
So, all right, I have a dog somewhere. Yeah, and the whole cynicalness of this show, of its view of where we are, of our country, is one of the things that I find really endearing about it. Is that it because if you live in Britain, you kind of accept that Britain has a wealth of issues that are long before you were born and are just being built upon. As you get older, things are just going to get a bit worse as things carry on. That's kind of the feel I get from this. So that, again, back to that point about corporate bookshops that comes up, that they're not better than these bookshops. They're just a factor of living in Britain, is that anything that was once independent is now going to be a massive shop that has 50 chains across the country. Mm. And then the flight one, they go through 15 or 16 different countries to do their very cheap holiday. And that's the thing. We have very cheap holidays. Well, we did. I don't know if they're cheap anymore because of one thing and another. Yeah. And there are so many episodes that are really effective at putting apart a particular thing about being British or about living in Britain. And it's like, I'm a massive cinephile. I love going to the cinema. But the episode that Bernard goes to the cinema and pays like £20 for popcorn and a drink speaks to me, because I brought a drink last night and I think it was £3 or £4 for a watered down Pepsi. And I was like, okay. But yeah, there are all these like observations of what it is to live in Britain. And it's not very positive that we're living in Britain, but you know, they endure it because that's where they are.
So true. And yeah, that whole cinema thing, it's funny then and it's funny now. Like, it's again, a lot of the jokes that still resonate. I mean, I even love the isn't the thread line after that he then goes and gets a job because he gets locked out. So he gets a job in like a takeaway shop,
in like
just
a
to
chicken
avoid
and
the
burger
rain.
Shop.
And it's even that like little brief gag where like it's the same guy that he spoke to in the cinema. Like, and that's a really good commentary on, you know, like people working minimum wage jobs and trying to support them, but it's a throwaway gag.
Yeah.
It's not like a big social commentary. It's not like the whole episode. It's just a brief moment, and then it just moves on. Like you said, it's this thing of just like accepting life in Britain. It accepts these. It just throws these things out of like, oh yeah, this is how it is, and then you kind of just you carry on, which I think is just brilliant.
Yeah, totally. And I love that episode. It also has my favorite cameo from Pete. I can't remember his surname, but.
So I'm going to find, because I've got all the cast up here, so I'd love to go through this. Which one are you referring to? Is it the one where he orders the burger and then he just,
no,
like...
so it's Fran's storyline, which is where the...
Oh, Peter Serafinowicz.
Yeah, so he has this amazing way of saying Fran, which I won't try and emulate because the way he says it is just phenomenal. And that might actually be one of the first episodes of a TV show that I saw that was about... female self-pleasure, because it's not really a subject from the 2000s.
That's true.
And Fran's entire story is that she's turned on by this guy's voice, but can't stand him. So she listens to the shipping forecast, which he's doing. And it's, again, odd, bit surreal, but hilarious. And so, yeah.
It is. And it's great use of Peter Serafinowicz's voice. I mean, he's an amazing actor in general, but... Yeah, the character he plays is called Howell Granger, which is just a great name for a radio presenter. And it's one of those, again, like, you just look at, I'm looking at the cast now, and you mentioned, you know, Simon Pegg, Nick Frost is in this. I'm pretty sure in the first episode, Martin Freeman's in there.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of big British actors, even Craig Parkinson, you know, there's loads of guys that you'll watch it, and you go, oh, I know that. Olivia Colman's in here, like... There's tons of these characters because this was then they were starting out.
Yeah, it feels almost like this is a show that drew in a lot of the other actors in Channel 4 comedies at the time would come on to this show.
Yeah.
And because, so like David Walliams, I think, is in the second episode as a customer.
Yeah.
And so it's like before Olivia Colman was an Oscar-winning actress And it's before Martin Freeman was in The Hobbit and Sherlock. And all these actors have gone on to be huge, but they pop up for like a scene in Black Books. And they do, and they have great fun of it. They always have great fun of their cameos. So like Olivia Colman is part of a particularly disastrous hen party. And works really well. And because Olivia Colman is a phenomenal comedy actress as well as a phenomenal, you know, serious actor. She is phenomenal in comedies, and this is probably just before she did Peep Show, so that's about where she is. And yeah, and it's just this kind of show that kind of brings in all these TV sitcom actors of the time, and lucky for them, most of them have gone off to be stars of huge franchises and have gone on to do amazing things. So it just gives it this quality of being a time capsule of the early 2000s Channel 4 comedy, but in a really effective way.
Absolutely. It really, really is. And as you say, what it does nicely with a lot of these cameos, as you just said, is it does make good use of them, which is really cool. So it's nice, sort of like you say, looking back at these people that are now like Oscar winning actors and just seeing them have a bit of fun in a really daft sitcom.
Yeah.
And I'm curious, do you have like a favorite guest character? I mean, I can think of several that I love, but yeah, are there any that kind of leap out to you?
Well, if it's not Peter
Serafinowicz.
If it's not him, but that...
I've got the name in front of me, I'm cheating.
Yeah.
But
if it's not him, because that's just a general love of him, but I think he is well used in this, even if it's kind of similar to his spaced persona in that it's all about the voice. I like the crazy Simon Pegg we get. So we get Simon Pegg as the head of Goliath Books, and he's just wonderfully passive-aggressively terrifying in it.
Yeah, he is, isn't he?
And he does it so well. And I think Martin Freeman is great fun in the first episode, I think. But then I really like that storyline. But it is hard to pick one because I think they are so well used. Like Johnny Vegas is in it for an episode, and he is wonderfully seedy as the terrible landlord of Fran's flats, who's put in the additional flat and stolen some of her floor space, which again is commenting on how terrible it is to rent. And that's definitely something that's become a lot more relevant since. So maybe Johnny Vegas, but Simon Pegg's utterly deranged performance is wonderful. And it's probably one of his most enjoyable performances of any of his that I've watched, like, and not linked to an Edgar Wright product. Like, Edgar Wright gets the best work out of Pegg, but yeah.
Oh, for sure.
Him as a deranged bookshop manager who's just passive aggressively trying to destroy Manny is wonderful.
Is that the whole episode with that where he tries to get him to cut his hair and that's like the final straw and he like runs out of the shop?
Like his metaphor about football, and then there's someone on the pitch who's wearing sandals, and then
it just goes off on one. Like you said, he's passive aggressive and terrifying is definitely the two words.
And I not to that extent, but I've definitely worked with people in shops and other places who are like and that's the thing. There's observation going on there, and a lot of the cameos are observations of stuff that like are built into what the show is. The kind of commentary it has on Britain is there in how it uses its cameos.
Yeah, so she used to come into the shop to see me and Bernard. It was great.
I took a risk when I employed you, Manny. Don't eat muffins when I'm developing you. I took a risk when I gave you a job. A lot of people would have said, who is this rudderless hippie? How do I get away from him? Has he got a hunting knife strapped to his shin? But I saw through that. But you have to work for me, okay?
Okay.
We're your friends now, Manny.
Yes, I know. Thank you, Evan.
Okay. Now, one of our valued younger customers has blocked up the toilets with Monster Munch. Now, I need that toilet back in play. Let's approach that as a team, shall we? How can we make that happen?
Okay, we could phone for a plumber.
Go team.
Yes, exactly. And it's always to, I think, the betterment of the episodes. You know, I mean, I just looking through the cast now, I love Rob Brydon's little role as just the boss that's just angry and screaming at everybody, but you never find out what he does either. Like, the running joke of that office is like, you don't, you know, Fran goes in, has no idea what she's supposed to be doing in this job, and then she does a presentation, leaves, still has no idea, and you as the audience are none the wiser either. Like, at no point does the episode ever give away what any one person's job is in that office, and it's just genius. Like, it's such a confusing but brilliant use of those characters.
Yeah, yeah, Rob Brydon's great in it. I like it when there are actors who are in it and then got into bigger things. So there's Dot from Line of Duty is in the Bookies episode.
Yeah. He's one of my favourites.
In a not dissimilar character. He's not dissimilar from how he is in Line of Duty. And I forget the name of the actor, but in the one where Manny basically becomes a police detective by mistake because he's read too many police detective novels and drunk too much coffee and he's got a leather jacket. And the police detective he ends up with, I believe, is in The Dark Knight as the police commissioner.
It's Colin McFarlane's the actor.
Yeah, and it's just
Inspector Norris. Yeah.
When you see people from Black Books in big Hollywood shows, it takes me right back to their bit in Black Books, and it's lovely.
I thank you for bringing that to my attention, because do you know what? I was just thinking, like, what did I see him in? Yeah, you're right. He's the commissioner in Batman Begins and Dark Knight, respectively. Like, yeah. And just he's in it for, like, 5 minutes as this London police officer. And he's like, and again, they lean into a lot of these, like, tropes and stereotypes. And I think doesn't that episode end with Manny having a breakdown in front of a suspect?
Yeah, so he has a breakdown and he gets out of being it, and then he sits. The running joke is that he might sit poorly on a chair because he keeps sitting on it with the back facing him, and then he sits really badly, and that's how it ends. But he is very honest with this criminal, and this criminal just confesses to things because he thinks it's because he doesn't get what's going on, and so he just confesses so he can go away.
And that whole bit where he chases the man around the street for the handbag, and then as soon as the man turns around, he's like, hang on a minute. And he just carries on jogging past him. Again, just as like a whole episode that just plays with tropes of cop shows. But again, it's not like the big thing. It's just a beat and then it moves on. And it's very, very funny and honest. And I mean, there's so many. Like you said, Craig Parkinson, I love as Martin the Tout, that whole thing of Bernard's problem with gambling, which totally makes sense.
Yeah,
it lines up with the character.
No, he's a destructive, addictive personality. Every time he has a new interest, like when he has an interest in a girl, it gets obsessive and weird, and he sends too many gifts and bad poems.
Was it the summer girl one?
Yeah, it's when he wants to find a summer girl, and Manny keeps talking about if it gets to 88 degrees or something like that, and he has Dave syndrome, and so... So you've got all a lot of the episodes are just them picking up on the character's particular weirdness. So Bernard's obsessive and self-destructive. Manny is odd and has all these odd things, and that kind of feeds into episodes. And then Fran is just kind of a bit lost. So we either have her trying to find a job or dating people, and it all comes back to the trio coming back together most times, and then the show ends and it ends nicely. Well, not nicely.
And it's it's one of those, funny enough, that it fits into that category of sitcom where, like, no one seems to learn or grow. It's just, like, the status quo is maintained usually by the end of an episode. No one's really learned anything from their experiences, which is great. Again, it's a type of sitcom that at times can be quite fun to watch because it's just different from the whole, like, now what did we learn, everybody? And
moral of the week. Like,
yeah, exactly. None of that here. Like, these characters, like we said earlier, one of them gets his best friend in prison for killing the Pope. Doesn't even register that's happened.
Yeah.
Like, it just ends and he carries on with his life.
And it's probably why it's a good thing there are only 18 episodes, because the shows that outstay their welcome for me are the ones that are long and no one really learns anything and it's just repeating the same thing. And so you get to a point five, six, seven seasons in where you're just a bit tired of the show, whereas this is three series, six episodes each, and done.
Yeah, that's it. Short, sweet. They all have their crazy adventures, and that's fine. And it's like you say, it does. I think therefore benefit with repeat viewing.
Yeah,
because you know what you're in for. It's kind of that comforting part of watching a sitcom, and there's so much great stuff here. I mean, I just flashed one of my personal favorite episodes. It has to be one of the best episodes. When Manny realizes he can play the piano, which is a great use of Bill Bailey's musical talent. Yeah. But the whole thing's absurd. And it's like, I think it's probably one of the best episodes of the series because it's just it being the most silly and absurd. and it brings all three characters together, you know, in a really wonderful way where they're all trying to fake playing the piano whilst Bill Bailey's Manny is inside with spoons hitting the keys. And it's like, and it's one of those images that's just so iconic.
And it feeds into some of their worst traits, so that Bernard and Fran are both lying for different reasons. Yeah. Fran, because she thought she wanted to play the piano and then found out it was hard, so wanted to stop playing the piano. And Bernard, because there's a girl involved, and so he's going to lie about how great he is. And then Fran, being Fran, takes it further to put him into a worse situation. So she basically argues he's the Renaissance.
Yeah, that's right. And it just ends with them doing a dual piano, and like I said, and then Manny trying to cover for both of them desperately. And it's just, it's like the perfect kind of summation of all three characters and how they work so well off each other. Like you say, generally Fran and Bernard being awful and Manny kind of left somewhere in the middle, balancing it all out. But it's just a great episode. It's one of my favorites. It's such a rare show, I think. And as you say, I find it fascinating because if you watch this and you watch Father Ted, as you mentioned, IT Crowd, these kind of similar, because Graham Linehan has had a hand in all three. Yeah. And I feel like they're really good ones to watch in succession. So if people are listening, they're like, yeah, do you know what? I really love Black Books. And you've not seen IT Crowd, you've not seen Father Ted. I'd say go and watch those, because if you love everything about this and what you're hearing about this, like, those are two excellent shows. And similar to this, aren't they?
And
short seasons.
Particularly Father Ted. Father Ted for me is particularly because there's definitely a lot of the... it's not quite politics in this, but in Father Ted it is politics. It's all about the Catholic Church, and there's a lot of stuff in that about how terrible the Catholic Church has been and continues to be, and that's all bred into it. Plus, there's also destructive characters who have their own terrible impulses. So Ted is there because he stole money, essentially, or misappropriated funds. And then Jack's there and he's an alcoholic and destructive. And all this stuff is in there as well. And then it feeds into this. And then you get to the IT Crowd, which I think softens some of the commentary, but has still that kind of grouping of people that are not really right for each other, but are bound together.
Yeah. Exactly. It's a really good use of all of those characters and that kind of style. And like you said, this is just another example of that. But yeah, I feel like where it changes, because my understanding is, I think, didn't Graham Linehan had a hand in like the first season?
So he is the first series, and then it became entirely Dylan Moran's project. And there are other writers involved going forward, but it is Dylan's for the next two seasons. And you can kind of see a shift. It kind of gets odder as it goes on and more surreal and more willing to have odd episodes. Whereas it feels definitely at the start that it's kind of in this box that has to be in about people running a bookshop and coming together. And then it gets odder. And it's there at the end of series one that it's getting odder and surreal. But then when Graham leaves, it kind of just goes full tilt into being whatever Dylan wants it to be.
Yeah, exactly. Whatever thing's caught his attention, he just wants to shine a light on it and have these three characters just run around and be really, really bizarre. But I'm just curious, do you have a favourite episode then out of all of this? Because there's quite a lot of moments we've talked about.
What are my favourite episodes? So there's like one a series I could bring up. I think the winemaking episode is so spot on. But that's mostly because of Manny and Bernard's storyline. I think Fran's one is not great in that episode, but I think that Bernard and Manny are so good in that episode. But it might be... So there's like another one which is kind of like a repeat of that, which is where they write the children's book. And because Fran's story there feels better, it's her going on this horrific hen party. I think it's called Elephants and Hens, the episode.
Yes, and, that's right.
Because I think both portions are strong. So like Bernard and Manny are at their best when they're basically locked in together doing something. And in this, Bernard writes this kind of over 1,000 page text about essentially Russian history and how the Second World War in the 30s of Russia fed into other stuff and all this stuff, isn't it? It's meant to be a children's book, and then yeah, Bernard right. pushes them to do something else, and so they do a children's book about an elephant who loses a balloon. And I had for a long time a T-shirt that my partner got me that had the end image from the book, and it says, yeah. and then they all drank lemonade, and I love that T-shirt. But then yeah. Fran in that episode has this hen party, and there's lots of famous comedians are playing other members of the hen party, and they go to this house in the middle of nowhere and they drink terrible alcohol, and terrible secrets come out in that episode, instigated by Fran telling people terrible secrets because she's found out that they don't really like her. Fran basically finds out fairly often that the people outside of Bernard and Manny don't actually like her or don't like who she is and think she's odd. And so she then gets vengeful and her worst traits come out. So that's probably my favorite episode, but there are so many episodes it could have been. It could have been Fever, which is the one where it's really hot and Bernard wants a summer girl and Fran is losing space in her flat and Manny's going insane because he is worried about how it's going to get hot for him and what happens when it reaches a certain temperature. I'll stick with Elephants and Hens because I just think that because there's these two A and B plotline and both are very strong and very funny and just show the traits, the characters that are most funny.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you have a favourite?
Yeah, for me, it's probably the piano one, just because, again, it's really funny just watching just the image of Bill Bailey with like four spoons in hand smacking strings on a piano is hilarious. But like you say, I love the Elephants and Hens one as well, because like you said, it's when I think the series is at its best, when it's really tapping into the worst traits of the characters. Yeah. And you just said something a minute ago that I think is so true and so funny about this show is whenever these characters... we're introduced to the people that are outside of the main three. And it's always shocking when you're like, how do these people have friends outside of each other? And you learn quite quickly, like, oh, they don't have them for very long, or they're people that they're kind of related to, or they sort of know. But yeah, like you said, whenever they do spend time with people outside of the main group, it never ends well. Like, there's always something that goes horribly wrong. And like you say, it's usually because of what the characters are doing to these people. Like, their worst traits come out. And I just thought of another episode, I can't remember what it's called, but where Dylan Moran is kicked out of a friend's house. Like, for a meal. And he spends the whole episode trying to figure out what he did. And he can't remember because he was so blindingly drunk. And it just gets progressively worse, like, as the episode goes on. It just builds up and builds up, and then you realise what he's done, and you're like, oh, no. It's just so bad.
And if everyone in this show was as broken and destructive as these three are, I don't think I'd particularly like the show. I think it'd be too much. But because these three are just this pool of chaos that's going round, and then they interact with people, and they make their lives worse, and then carry on, and we never quite see the repercussions of them being these pools of chaos, this like whirlwind of chaos. But it's funny to watch them destroy the people around them. But we also know that they're not everyone's like them. So there are better examples out there, better people out there. And so again, it's the whole thing of, I might not really like these three because Bernard is, well, awful. Manny's pretty annoying at times. And Fran is wonderfully destructive and has all these awful traits to her. But I enjoy watching them do their stuff.
Yeah, exactly. It's like you said, it's that kind of perfect storm of people just being weird and bouncing off each other and having these bizarro adventures. But it's fun.
Yeah, it's really fun. It's really funny. And the comedy really lands. And from funny one-liners, from great interplay, from slapstick, from surreal images passing by. So family getting eaten by a sofa that they've got. And then it's just being observed by Bernard, and then it carries on. And all this stuff, all these different comedy types are playing into this. And it does it all so well. It can be silly and surreal and kind of dumb. And it can be really smart and funny and insightful about the world around it. And the two can sit side by side in the same scene.
Yeah. I remember an early episode where I think Manny buys a bunch of books and like gets the bookshop running properly. And we as the audience find out why that doesn't actually work, you know, and Buddha comes back and says, like, what have you done? And and the whole joke is like, well, actually, if you do set it up properly, people don't buy books, you know, and that's the whole joke of the show is it's like, he's like, yeah, no, I know, I've tried this. It doesn't work.
Yeah.
You know, because we watching it think, oh, he just needs to tidy it up and bring some stuff in and people will come.
Yeah.
And you realize, oh, no, people just mill about and want to drink coffee and window shop, which is, again, a 20-year-old observation, which is has never been more true than it is now today.
Yeah.
And it's just stuff like that, again, that's thrown in as a, just like a few minutes of plot and then it just moves on. And it's really, really clever. So like you said, it's quite a bizarre sitcom. I don't know if we've – I think actually – I'm just thinking about the episodes we've done already. It is very unique compared to a lot of the other ones we've already discussed. And yeah, I definitely think, as you said, a lot of that comes down to, in particular, Dylan Moran bringing his kind of bizarre comedy style to it, which I'm here for.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm somebody that has all of his DVDs and I've seen him live. I could not, I don't know about you, Russell, but when I saw him live a couple of years back, I couldn't tell you what was said. I just remember it being in fits of laughter for like close to 2 hours. And I had to then go and buy the DVD of that show later that year just to find out what was actually said in the stand up.
His, I think I've seen him twice and definitely the first time. Mm. The thing that stood out was, so it was around the time when we had Nick Clegg and David Cameron and Ed Miliband. And he basically tore apart all three of the parties, all three of the leaders,
right,
and gave them both barrels each. And it was hilarious because, and his observations weren't like the obvious ones. They were much more verbose, much more. There's something about how he constructs his comedy.
Yeah.
So it's quite complicated what he's saying. And then he says it and it's funny, but it's like, well, no one else could do this. No one else could do what you're doing. And he does it so well. Like Bill Bailey's comedy is much more. Why I love Bill Bailey, because I've seen him a couple of times, is because he does. Because he's nice, he does very nice comedy, and he does these great songs. Yeah. You have a really enjoyable time, but I think Dylan Moran's comedy is more built into saying really profound, quite downbeat things, but saying them in a way that only he can say.
Yeah, it's like wrapped up in these weird metaphors that, like you said, on the surface, you're like, what are you talking about? And then you think about it and you go, oh, actually, that's really clever.
Yeah.
That's really insightful. Yeah, there's so many. And like you said, he infuses that into this show. And I just think it's wonderful for that reason. And I'm so glad you've brought it to us today. And I highly recommend people go and watch this.
Yeah,
I recommend
all the shows. But probably on Netflix. It's definitely on All Four. There's 18 episodes. They're 25 minutes long. So you can do this very quickly. And it's not, it's not like, it's not one of those American shows where they're like 300 episodes and 120 of them are worth watching, but you've got to get through all of them to understand the 120 worth watching.
Yes. I will say that as well. You're right. I feel like I'm quite laid back with stuff like this, where I feel I like to give comedies the benefit of the doubt. And I'll say, well, the first season, you know, we've had this discussion a bunch of times, but you know, the first season, that is a common complaint.
Yeah.
Like I say, of a lot of bigger series where it's like, oh, but it wasn't quite as good. But then you think, well, yeah, they were feeling things out and, you know, you got to know what your audience is. But this show doesn't have that problem. I feel like if you watch the pilot, it's the kind of show that knows exactly what it is, exactly what it's doing. It knows who the characters are. It knows who its audience is. And so for that reason, it's like, yeah, just watch the pilot. And if you love it, the rest of it is just as good, if not better. If you don't, fair enough. You know, you know what it's.
Yeah, you'll know why. From the first episode, you'll know if you like it or not. And if you don't like it, you'll know exactly why. And I think that's the thing with a lot of British comedies, is we don't really give our comedies time to have bad seasons.
That's true.
Yeah. Most British comedies are quite short, and if they don't get it, then they're not going to get a second series. They're not going to be recommissioned because we have fewer channels. We have less money, frankly, to spend on this thing. We have a lot of comedy talent out there. There's a lot of comedy talent out there who are desperate for a TV show, so If you can't do it in your first series, there's going to be 3, 4, 5 other people who happily take that pot of money and spend it on their one. So I think I think like something like Black Books is so well written because you kind of can't come in with a a lackluster first series. You can't come in with one that only has a couple of good jokes. You have to be instantly great. And that's the thing with things like Space of This Time or Father Ted before this, is those two also both instantly great and instantly well-defined. Something like Friday Night Dinners, for example, is instantly defined as to what it is, and it instantly has all the elements are there, and all the elements of Black Books for how it's going to be is there in the first episode.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. It just drops you straight in, and that's such an interesting point you brought up, and I think that's true. Yeah, that I guess, not an expert, but from what I hear, a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff is, there seems like there's a lot less moving parts with British sitcoms than our American. Yeah. And like you say, that's probably just because of the scale of television. Like you said, we're at this time, especially when this was coming out, it was, the few domestic channels, and that was kind of it.
Yes, this is like pre-Freeview, or at least, I think this is pre-Freeview. And then you take someone like America, where there are many channels, and now there are many streaming platforms. So there's such a demand for content in America. And so you get something like Ted Lasso, which is one of my current loves, is an American show about Britain, but it's an American show. And it's just sucked in British talent to make it feel a bit more British. And then with something like that, it's Apple TV is supporting it. So they can have all the money they need to make it work. They can have all the money they need for the stars, but I don't think Channel 4 or BBC or any of the other ones have enough money to bring in big stars to make their show work. So you've got to have something like Black Books, which comes defined, ready to go, and works not because someone famous is in it, because these three were not famous. And I mean, beyond Bill Bailey, they're not super famous now. I mean, Tamsin Grieg is never not in work, but she's not a household name, whereas Bill Bailey is a household name because of the persona he's become since. But when this was around, these three were not huge names, and so it just relied upon the writing and the talent both on and off screen.
Definitely. And it well, the best part about it, because it's such a simple stripped back format and the way it's filmed and done, all of that just comes through. You know, I feel like it's very raw as well when you're watching it. It's not glossy, and that kind of adds as well to the sort of dour nature of it, which I think just gives it that kind of that character. And yeah, it's just brilliant. So I highly encourage people to, like you say, if you've seen Father Ted, you've seen IT Crowd, if you've watched any of Dylan Moran or Bill Bailey stand-up, if you think, oh yeah, I know these people, or like you said, Tamsin Grigg in like Friday Night Dinner.
Yeah, if you've loved Friday Night Dinner, you should give this a try, because
there's a lot of great jumping off points, so it's like, definitely give this one a crack, and you'll know straight away by the end of the first episode if this is for you.
Exactly.
I will say as well, a friend of mine had the Little Book of Calm.
Well,
that made me so
happy. I have it right here. My partner got me as a gift, and it's nonsense. It's utter nonsense, but it's hilarious. Nonsense.
Oh, so good. Add a drop of lavender to your bath. Oh, I've loved this. I'm going to have so much fun putting in clips for this as well. But anyway, I mean, is there anything else you want to say about this, this Russell?
Not particularly. I mean, just that I love it, that I'm probably now going to go watch it all again, having watched it all to prepare for this. I'll probably go up again and dive into some of them. It's because it's just exceptional. I'm kind of sad that Dylan Moran has never really done any TV since. This is his most prominent piece, and he just I guess he doesn't need it. He doesn't feel like the kind of person who needs to do comedy. He does comedy when he wants to do it. He'll disappear for a few years and then come back with a show or with something new to say, and I quite admire that in him. And I'm always happy that Bill Bailey is a success, because a lovely chap and does good comedy. And as I say, Tamsin Grieg is sensational in whatever she's in, and keeps all of pace she's in. So, yeah, I love this show a lot, particularly those three.
Well said. Well, thank you so much for coming onto the show and sharing this with us. So I guess to take us home, where can the good people find you?
I release a podcast every Wednesday under the banner Not Just for Kids. It is a podcast that looks at family films throughout the ages. It was my, hey, 2020 is a weird year. Let's do something to distract from the weirdness. And so I did a podcast about family films. I've done a series on Spielberg as director and producer. I've done Studio Ghibli. I've done a series that looked at the 10 years between Toy Story and Home and Arrange. So it's sort of the birth of Pixar that led into the death of 2D animation in the West, which is very sad. and then now I'm doing the 90s because I watched... It's basically when I first went to the cinema was with in the 90s. The first time I went to Blockbuster was in the 90s. All these films I am just wallowing in. So I've done a bit on Mouse Hunt. I've done some stuff on... what else have we done? Nutty Professor, The Mask. We're going to get into Stargate, Independence Day, The Mummy. We're going to do Brendan Fraser because love the man. So yeah, so that's where you'll find me. So that's where wherever you're listening to this, search for that one too, and you'll find it. And I'm on Twitter at Russ Loves Movies, and I share anything I write, anything that I am thinking about. Mostly, I just retweet people I think are funny. but yeah,
that's a good use of Twitter.
I mean, I try and stay off of the arguments that happen on Twitter because they just seem to not really have an end point. So it seems a destructive path to go down. But yeah, that's best place to find me, either in your podcast feed. And I get on guests every week, so I get great guests. And on Twitter.
Brilliant. Thank you. I would definitely be putting in links to that. And I'll say right now, there sounds like there's a lot of crossover, actually, with some of the stuff you've talked about with previous guests and their shows and their topics. Yeah. So definitely go and check that out, guys. But thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me on. This has been really good fun.
Good. It's my pleasure.
And there we have it. A huge thank you to Russell for coming onto the podcast and sharing your love of Black Books with us. I had an absolute blast making this episode, and I hope you guys enjoyed it too. Be sure to go and check out Russell's podcast, Not Just for Kids. It's absolutely wonderful. I've been checking out a few episodes since the recording, and I've put the links in the description for you, as well as all of the usual places you can go and find him and the podcast. Go and check it out. Go and give it a follow. You won't regret it. I also want to give another thank you to Alex Jenkins, who designs the artwork for the show. If you love what you see in the logo, his details are also linked in the description for you of this podcast. You can go and find him and commission him for your own work as well. A big thank you to all of you who've been checking out the show, who've been leaving me reviews. There's another one that's just come in. I want to read it out and give a massive thank you to the person who gave me a lovely 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. The Pepperoni Prince, another fantastic name. He says, I'm a fan of Fundamentals. Harley is a great host, and this is a wonderful format for a podcast. Nice and simple. Thank you so much for leaving that. That's actually made my day. And if you want to earn a shout out just like the Pepperoni Prince, then by all means, make sure that you do that on your favorite podcatcher. I believe Apple is still the best one to do it on. But of course, if you have done it on another platform, that's brilliant. Please make sure you let me know so I don't miss it. You can find me in the details that are in the show notes and let me know. Of course, you've earned a shout out. That's it from me. I'll be back again in a week's time with another sitcom, and I'll leave a little hint as to what is coming up next for you. So until next time, stay tuned and stay safe.
Oh my God, you've got to tell him tonight. You've got to tell him now.
I know.
I can't believe it. How long have you known about this?
About 3 weeks.
What, you've known for 3 weeks? You didn't think to tell me?
I tried.
Not that hard.
Don't argue, my love. It's not worth it.
I love you, Tawny.
Yeah, you know when we were away and I said I had something to tell you?
Yeah.
And I told you about Nessa being in the original lineup of All Saints, but she had to leave because she didn't get on with Chasney. I was trying to tell you then.
What, so you made all that up?
No.
That was true. It was a power struggle.
Look, none of this matters who told you when and what have you. What matters is the only person who hasn't been told is the only person who should have been told, and he's sat out there.
Who? Bryn?
No!
Smithy.
I come to Wales, you can come up here. I go to church with you. We just hang out. You know, like best mates do.
Do you think Mick will mind if I finish his last slice of pizza?
So what if he does? I'll back you up, because that's what best mates do.
Oh, Smithy, I got something to tell you.
What?
I'm pregnant. And you're the father.